Businessman and philanthropist Steve Shuck has made it his life's mission to free working families of the shackles created by government-run education. His charity, Parents Challenge, provides funding and training to empower families to send their kids to a school of their choice, be it public or private. I'm John Caldera. This is the audio version of our TV show, Devil's Advocate. You can watch that program by going to youtube.com and looking for IITV. That's Independence Institute TV. Please subscribe and share this podcast. Enjoy. So we want kids to have better educations. I think that's a universal, but few people put their money where their mouth is, like Steve Shuck from Parents Challenge and so many others. Steve, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure, my honor. Thank you, John.
All right. First of all, for those who don't know you, you've been a developer for as long as I've known you. Yeah. And you've been successful, you've been unsuccessful, then you've been successful again.
A couple of times.
You understand the power of the marketplace. Before we get into education, just what have you learned in your many years of business? Is there one lesson that if you're talking to a high school kid, you got to say, here's why it works, or here's why it doesn't work?
Well, I guess I look at it from two perspectives, John. One is systemic, what works. Free markets work, competition works, open markets, they generate the absolute optimum outcome. At a personal level, there's no substitute for hard work. It's almost prioritizing the hardest work, assuming that that has the greatest benefit. But certainly, we have a culture today that does not celebrate or encourage the work ethic that Joyce and I grew up with, and I think that does not bode well. So what I look for, people who work hard and have a sense of service and a sense of desire to please others.
So, I'm not spilling any secrets. You've got some wealth. And by the way, I'm going to hit you up for a huge contribution there. But you've got wealth. But there have been periods where you've had a lot of money and then you didn't. You've been bankrupt.
You know, not legally.
Not legally. But you've been
insolvent.
All right. Pardon my technicalities. Point being, here's a guy who's had lots of success and then business conditions changed, and you didn't have any money. And then you build yourself back up. What's the lesson in that?
Perseverance. I've been asked that question several times, and there's just a desire to be productive, do it right. We never filed bankruptcy. We took care of our creditors and our customers, and it was just a matter of time before we were able to generate a recovery.
Why didn't you just throw in the towel? I mean, at some point you can go, forget this. Shuck Communities. Yeah. You're like, we'll rename something. We'll bail it out and go. But why stay with it?
Never crossed my mind. Never ever crossed my mind. In my earlier years, I was a jock, competed in all kinds of different sports. I was a coach, and you quickly learn that some days you get beaten, knocked to the ground, and the antidote to that is to get back up and knock somebody else to the ground. And so I had that.
You say this about competition
in my system,
but competition made you insolvent,
and also gave me the opportunity to rebuild. So. Is the glass half empty or half full?
Let's get to education. As long as I've known you, education has been your passion. I mean, the passion that you have worked for politically, things when you ran for governor, the issues you've worked on for school board races, and I want to get into the Parents Challenge, organization you run. Why? Why education? You got environment, you got healthcare, you got all these things you could be passionate about. You never had a problem sending your kids to the school that you wanted to. Why is this such a big deal?
thanks for the question, but the answer is very simple. There's nothing more important to the future of this country than to have a well-educated populace. Thomas Jefferson said that 250 years ago. If we don't educate our kids, if they're not well-versed in the fundamental values, that culture that built this country, then the country isn't going to survive. I was 4F in my younger years. I was too young to go to Korea, too old for Vietnam, and this is my opportunity to do my service. I'm well positioned to fight the battle. I just believe passionately that we have to do a better job educating our kids. We've done a terrible, atrocious job. We're whatever it is, 25th, 28th in the world. We spend more than any other country, but we produce less than all but 27. I mean, we produce less than 27, 28 other countries. That's a recipe for democracy, capitalism to not survive.
When did you put together Parents Challenge? What is it? I really want to get into the name of it.
So when I ran for governor, I did what...
When was that?
1986, before you were born.
Before I was born.
Yeah. And like I think most business people would do, I built a business plan. Said, okay, here are the various departments of government. What are we going to do in each one of those to improve the performance? Do more for less, which I'm 100% like you, convinced is very possible. Just takes willpower. Doesn't take brilliance, takes willpower. So among the things I worked on was education. I was on a bunch of local charities like the Business Education Coalition or whatever. And they were just doing the same old stuff. I looked at the results and they were tragic.
When you say same old stuff, what do you mean?
Educating the same kids the same way. No sense of a need to reform to be the means by which you improve results. I was just looking at results. And 20-30% of the kids in Colorado can function at grade level. That means 50-60% cannot. Get into minority communities, it's considerably worse. Get into urban areas, it's worse. Suburban is okay. Rural is mixed. But by and large, kids in Colorado were not getting educated, which means that Colorado's future was very much in jeopardy.
Now, a lot of places try to help out and give scholarships to help people to go to school. And
so let me quickly finish the background. So as I studied the way education is funded and delivered in Colorado, the solution became self-apparent immediately. All the money that's spent on public education in Colorado goes to the provider, goes to school districts. So where is the power set? Power sets on the provider side. So what about the consumer? Consumer is out of the equation. Unless, like you alluded to earlier, people like me have means and can pick whatever school they think would be best for their kids. Private, they move to another district where the schools are better, whatever. But low-income families were stuck. And I looked at that and said, well, the answer is what Milton Friedman said. Don't give the money to the system. Give the money to parents and let them shop and pick whatever school they think is best for their kids. And instantly, magic will happen. Schools will improve overnight if they have to compete in order to survive. So very quickly, I became a school choice fanatic. And I had to make the decision shortly after I lost in 1986. Joyce and I had long conversation about whether we're going to do it again, because I had sort of paid my dues, and now I knew the system, and I knew where all the skeletons were buried, or worse. or, in the alternative, not spend my time fighting with my friends and kissing babies and campaigning and talking about myself, and rather go put all of that energy, all those resources, all that passion into trying to improve the system. We opted for the latter, and so immediately I started becoming active locally, statewide, and nationally in the school choice movement, because to me, the answer was simple. Just give the money to parents and let them pick, let them choose. And so that's what I did. There were several local constitutional initiatives that tried to put vouchers or tax credits into the Constitution. All failed for the very single reason that the teachers' union could outspend us no matter what we spent. If I raised $5 million, they'd raise $25.
Isn't there also, though, a sense, it's the same issue you have with term limits, which is, you know, everybody else's congressman is a bum, but I kind of like mine. And schools are very good at providing the Stockholm syndrome for parents. You know, there's a lot of school pride in your neighborhood school, but you don't send your kid to the closest doctor. You send your kid to the doctor that's best for your kid. And even if that school is great for 80, 90% of the kids in that neighborhood, there are kids that that school isn't good for, but you really can't go someplace else. Now, we've opened up a lot of choice inside public education. We have charter schools and open enrollment, and I'm glad Independence Institute was really key at making those reforms happen. But the ultimate one of, I don't have money to move to Cherry Creek to get into the school district that would be right for my special needs kid, is, well, I gotta pay the money. And you know, you rich guys, you can pay the money, but most people can't.
That's the point precisely. So if everybody is given sufficient funding to be able to pick and choose whatever school they want, public, private, charter, home, whatever was best for each individual child, then not only would those families benefit, but the system would improve itself, because those schools that didn't perform would bleed out kids who chose a better alternative.
Let me tell you a real quick story. I went to Milwaukee, where they had actual vouchers. This was, oh my God, maybe 25 years ago. And they were experimenting with it, but they've been around for about 5 years. And I visited some of the government schools. I visited some of the private schools. One school was built on Martin Luther King's vision, and they were almost all Black children, all African-American children. Went to another one that was all Hispanic, basically. And I had lunch with the government school, the public school superintendent. And he said, oh yeah, vouchers have made our schools a lot better. I said, you mean they've made the private schools better? He said, no, they've made my schools better. I was like, huh? He said, yeah, we are a lot better. We have to focus on our curriculum. And now our principals go door to door knocking on potential school students' homes to talk to their parents and to convince the parent that this neighborhood school is the best fit for your kid, and here's why. Now, the idea of principals knocking on parents' doors to convince them, come to my school, here's why.
Bingo.
I can't even, it doesn't compute in my mind, but this superintendent said, yeah, and that's why our schools are getting better, and he looked at me, and our enrollment numbers are up, he said with great satisfaction.
Bingo, that's a perfect example. I took a contingent from Denver to Milwaukee. We went through the exact same experience. Michael Hancock was with us. It's so self-apparent. So the next question people ask is, well, if it's so obvious and it's so clearly superior, why don't we do it?
Because protectionism works better.
You got it. They have more money. They've been controlling. We're talking about the teachers' unions, because there are two of them. They control the system. They've been controlling it for decades, probably 50 years. I had this conversation with Milton Friedman. It is almost a fool's errand to try and take the union, disempower the union, and re-empower parents. But we're dedicated to doing that. And that's why we created Parents Challenge.
What is Parents Challenge?
Let me set it up quickly. So in 1998 or 99, I can't remember, we passed state legislation that would provide tax credits, essentially vouchers, to low-income parents, well-designed. We had to take it to local referendum. Excuse me, it was a constitutional amendment, so we had to take it to the ballot. We did. The teachers' union outspent us 10 to 1. And let me go back. I'm sorry, I misspoke. It was legislation. It was passed. Governor Owens signed it. The teachers' union appealed it, sued the state of Colorado for having passed the legislation. And I came to the conclusion that it will be a long time before we could ever get competitive and have public dollars go directly to parents so that they could pick and choose the school they want for each of their children. And because there was, I looked at the landscape, the political landscape, and it was clear that Democrats would control one of the three bodies, either the House, Senate, or governorship for the foreseeable future. And so what I did was go about at raising private dollars to provide the exact same benefits that public dollars should. So I started Parents Challenge in Colorado Springs. Alex Cranberg started ACE, the Alliance for Choice in Education, in Denver. And we decided that we'd raise private philanthropic dollars to do what the state should have done with its own dollars. So we created Parents Challenge. Unlike ACE, our model was a little bit different. We provide scholarship grants to low-income families that they can use if they choose a traditional public school, charter public, private, or homeschool for their children. So they get the full menu of choice. And we don't discriminate, we don't pressure. We provide tons of information to allow them to have the most knowledge about what choice
they
should make.
What's the challenge? You were very intentional on saying the name of this is not the Scholarship Organization of Colorado, or this was Parents Challenge. What are you challenging parents?
Challenging parents to take control over their children's education, to grab that power back from the state, invest it in themselves, and we will provide them information and resources to make a knowledgeable, thoughtful, strategic decision for each of their children. It's fascinating. We have many families who are part of Parents Challenge and who take advantage of our funding to send their children to different types of school settings. So we have, in one family, we might have one child going to private, one homeschooled, one going to a public charter. That's That's the full menu of choice. And frankly, that's what lights my fire. Having the privilege of seeing the kind of impact that empowering parents has, is inspiring and justifies all the hard work and the bloodshed.
Even in that story, you know, I've sent my kids to a couple different schools. I have a special needs son, and the regular public school wouldn't work. A different public school was better. I had to fight tooth and nail to get him into this other school. It's amazing that, and any parent knows this, that Jimmy's like this, Sally's like that, and Sarah is a special thing altogether. And there's not a one size fits all. I'll draw the analogy. Food stamps, we give money directly to poor people who are hungry. That's the idea of it. It wasn't created by the welfare department. It wasn't created by Human Health Services or what. It was created by the ag department. They were like, we got to move this food. We need to help people. And so in the same way, they get, here, you qualify, here's money. Now, you can buy Twinkies with it, or you can buy lima beans. We're not going to tell you. And I imagine if the Department of Education was in charge of food stamps, you would have some very impressive people getting together in fluorescent lit rooms to decide what diet families are supposed to have, what they can have, when they should have it, and they'd all go to welfare or to warehouses, and families would go to the warehouses and get the food that they were told to have, versus saying, here, act like a person with money. And the dignity of just saying, here, go, act like a person with money, and the tolerance that has to happen on the other side, which is if you do buy ding-dongs and ho-hos instead of beans and carrots, well, we're going to have to respect your decision to do that.
Interesting example you use, John. I'm opposed to food stamps, but I'm in support of providing cash so that the recipient is treated with respect and dignity, is not told implicitly that we have to decide what is the right kind of food for you to buy. We're going to stigmatize you by giving you food stamps because we don't trust you to make the right kind of decision we think are right for you.
There's an ultimate insult to poor people. And it goes on every level of government, you don't know how to make good decisions for your health, for your safety, for your education, for your mobility. So we're here to make those decisions for you. You're welcome.
Thank you, John. That's one of the reasons we do what we do in Parents Challenge. We do not tell parents what is the best type of school for their child to attend. That's up to the parent.
And so you've got people you've given money to who send their kids to a public school.
Sure. Oh, sure. Traditional public.
I thought your job was to destroy public schools.
That's what the teachers union would have you think. They're into protecting schools. We're into protecting kids, and the difference is pretty dramatic. When you treat parents, I had a conversation with an extremely high-ranking politician in Colorado, as high as you can get, about school choice, and he challenged me and asked, how do you know that those parents won't pick a Nazi school? That was the example he used. To which my son was with me. He had to peel me off the ceiling. How dare you assume that because they're poor and maybe ethnic or whatever, that they would make a foolish decision like that on behalf of their why do you think you're better qualified to make the right decision for that family than they are? And that was the end of the conversation. I mean, that is unfortunately a typical kind of reaction this elitism that is so pervasive in America today. Those at the top think they know best. We're into empowering parents. Let me also bring out that in Parents Challenge, we have two basic thrusts. One is to provide scholarships and grants to low-income parents that can use to pick a different school. The other thing we do, a different school if they want, the other thing we do is run about 20, 25, maybe 30 parent empowerment sessions during the school year where we bring in experts in life skill activities.
Like what?
And mentor the parents in issues. We poll our parents in the spring of the year. What are subjects that are important to you where you'd like to have some kind of mentoring and expertise? And in the fall, we bring in these experts. We're only facilitators. And they address subjects that the parents themselves have identified.
Give me a couple of examples of those subjects.
Oh, bullying, how to handle a parent-teacher's conference. Many of them are with life skills, financial literacy, how to protect your kid on the internet. All those types of things, they're all videotaped. We provide free dinner to all attendees. They're open to the public. But it's mandatory. Some of the sessions, the fundamental sessions, are mandatory for parents.
This is where you teach them how to be a Nazi, then. That's the propaganda session? What is mandatory? When you say it's mandatory
Mandatory that they attend a session, several sessions. They're the basic sessions. We also pride ourselves on not being philanthropists, but being partners. We treat our parents as equals, as peers, and they have certain responsibilities. They have to provide a certain amount of public service. They can volunteer in their schools or their churches or wherever they decide, but we require that they have a certain amount of public service.
You're asking them for skin in the game.
Yep. And they don't fight back. They don't argue. They have as much desire.
Are you pushing a viewpoint on them, though? Are you going in there saying, yeah, I'll give you this money to help you raise your kids and give them the education. In exchange, you got to sit here and learn about why destroying the environment's good, why conservatism is good, why liberalism is bad. Yeah. Is that what you do?
No.
Because I would do that.
Now, that's Independence Institute. You didn't mention that I used to be a chair of it, so I can take the pot shot. As I mentioned a moment ago, every subject we cover is one that has been identified by parents themselves. So it's their agenda, not ours. And they don't have to attend if they don't want, except for the basic sessions, which are
how to enroll, how to
Mechanics and that kind of stuff. So, and they're eager, and we get a couple hundred parents at each of these sessions.
Wow. So, now, this is focused mostly in Colorado Springs, which is your backyard. And ACE Scholarship does great stuff, but largely Denver-centric. Is Parents Challenge growing?
Yes. So ACE has gone to multiple states, and they sort of run the program in multiple states. So they take the ACE model and relocate it to wherever. And they're probably in 8 or 10 states. They're doing a great job. But Parents Challenge is quite different. I will only take Parents Challenge to a community that wants us, in which takes ownership itself. We'll bring some funding. We get great support from the major foundations, Daniels and Anschutz, et cetera. And they are interested in having the Parents Challenge model replicated in other communities. But we're only going to go to communities in which there is local leadership that takes control. And and takes ownership, I should say.
I want to switch gears. You mentioned a couple of great foundations. There are great foundations in Denver, the great foundations around the country that do really good work. You have a foundation. You call it the Shuck Initiatives. I want to dive into this because I haven't seen anything done this way. I remember Bill Daniels. I did not know him personally, but who didn't know Bill Daniels? And, you know, he raised $1 billion for his Daniels Fund. And they do incredible and good work. Sometimes I wonder, is this really exactly what Bill would have wanted if he was still alive and on the board? I look at the Ford Foundation and all these other great foundations where you've had hardcore free market capitalists who have taken their wealth, their livelihood, their culmination, and they put it into a corpus, and now their descendants or descendants of descendants are spending it on stuff that would turn their stomachs. You have the Shuck Initiatives, partly to help groups like Parents Challenge. What is the Shuck Initiatives? But I really want to dive into the issue of donor intent. And I have never known anyone who has been more serious about saying, hey, when I'm gone, my money goes here, not there. And it goes for this, not that, than what you've been doing.
So Bill Daniels was a close personal friend and a business partner and a political ally. He asked me to sit on his board, which I did for 6 or 8 years, and I learned a lot, mostly about the drift of donor intent. So as we said, first of all, TSI is named Shuck Initiatives as distinct from calling it a foundation, because we don't see ourselves as philanthropists. We see ourselves as activists trying to make things happen or catalyze others to make things happen, the things that we want. Our motto is, or our North Star is, independence. We want people, very appropriate that we're sitting here, we want to help people move from dependency, which is a government objective, is to have more and more people dependent, to independence. So we're sort of fighting against the grain, the sort of natural national momentum, if you will. And so we're very specific about championing free markets, open markets, capitalism, personal responsibility, accountability in everything we do and everything we want those who we support to do. So it's value driven. It's driven by, it's cultural driven. And so what we've done mechanically.
Before you go into that, when you say you've seen it, and I've seen it too. I mean, I have, as you're on the giving side of the equation, I'm always on the asking side of the equation.
I'm on both.
And I've seen great organizations over generations when the kids come in or the kids' kids come in. It's like, I don't know if grandpa would really want you spending his money on that. But grandpa's gone. And so therefore you do it in the name of grandpa, but it's still up to a different generation. Very few foundations have a way to keep the donor's intent as generations go by. Many foundations have decided we're gonna spend down. I don't know if I'm trying to remember, it was Cyril or one of the others.
It was Bill Simon spent.
When all the people I know are gone, we're not spending any more money. So we have to spend it down because the natural drift is going to be towards collectivism.
So Bill Cadman runs TSI, and we've gone to great lengths to videotape my intentions in very clear terms. It's not complicated, and it is not ethereal. It's just not, it's very solid and usable and applicable. So you don't use such broad generalities and platitudes that you don't say anything. So we've tried to be very, very specific. We have 14 vignettes. They're 3 or 4 minutes each. Each on a different subject, not a different potential recipient type, but values.
If I get this right, the idea is the future administration or board is looking at different projects. And they go, I don't know, is there something Steve and Joyce would have supported? Well, let's go talk to Steve. He left us instructions because he's seen this happen. And what would he think? Because we know that all these philanthropists, they don't have to give away their money. It is a uniquely American phenomenon.
Absolutely.
That capitalists put all this money and then give it away. How many Carnegie libraries are there? They build it and they give it away. But giving it away meant I built it, I got to give it away to the things I want. But when you're gone, it's hard to do.
So I don't identify things I want. We identify the objective or the ultimate outcome that we seek. It could be in education, school choice, that's a perfect example, in homelessness and substance abuse. Our common friend, Bob Cote, who along with Bill Daniels was one of my mentors.
For those who don't know, Bob Cote, oh, I wish you were alive today. He was the founder of Step 13, now Step Denver. He built, thanks with your help and Bill Daniels and others, built this homeless rehabilitation center that took no government money.
And held the recipients responsible for their own behavior.
Let me put it this way. This guy was a foul-mouthed son of a bitch. And he didn't take any crap. And so if you wanted free meals and a free house, he would help you with that. But you had to, you a job. You have to stay clean. And we're going to put you through this program. And it's going to show you how to get a checking account and how to do this. And when you fall off, you're out. And his hit ratio was incredible. I just wish he were alive today to see the madness that's going on the streets of Denver.
Absolutely. And I only use that as an example of self-help, taking responsibility. Those are the things we expect future recipients of our support to advance and to fight for. So we don't identify giving areas, which is what Bill Daniels did. God bless him. What I learned is that you also have to add values and a mindset that so that you minimize, if hopefully eliminate, but at least minimize donor drift, the donor intent drift. Because as you said earlier, John, there's virtually no exception to major foundations created by capitalists and free enterprisers moving left and so far left that they end up being what would be the enemy of their founder.
And I can name on one hand the number of foundations that have stayed true to the founder's intent.
And so we've gone to great lengths. And the reason we haven't, there's been some pressure on me to spend it down from people who I really respect and trust. There's no way to protect the future, blah, blah, blah.
For those who aren't following, a guy like you can make a decision on your foundation, say, we're going to spend it down, and then it's going to go away in 50, 100 years, whatever. Or you can do it in perpetuity, in the idea that if you keep the corpus there and you only spend the yield off of it, the interest, it could stay forever.
Yes.
That sounds like such a great stroke to one's ego. It's going to be around forever. But the fact of the matter is, it's going to be around forever. And people you don't like will be spending the money.
Absolutely. I would correct you and just say that those who spend down usually do so in a handful of years.
Okay.
2, 3, 5, 8, 10 years at the most. For that very reason, the longer it endures, the less likely it is to operate consistent with the original intent of the donor. And just to quickly put a ribbon around this, so we have gone to great lengths to be very, very specific. In addition, as you and I were visiting earlier about, we even have a list of things we want the foundation to not do that we call thou shalt not. So that we...
Could you share a couple of those just because I think they're telling. And by the way, this is for your value structure. Other people who do their own foundation might have a completely different. Right.
The process, everybody should go through this process. The product may be different. They may have a different hierarchy of priorities than I do, but they should be intentional, not just say, well, I'm going to have my kids sit on the board because they share my bloodline and my name, when those kids may not share my values.
I've thought about this quite a bit, and I've seen people like you with money struggle with this, and that's why I made a decision years ago never to become wealthy, because I don't want to burden my kids with this type of problem. And it takes a certain amount of stick-to-itiveness to keep that.
I know you're being facetious, but the fact of the matter is, I've said this publicly dozens of times, nothing I've ever done in my life has been more difficult than giving money away strategically, effectively. Oh, you can give money to the United Way and Cancer Society and the safe stuff, to hospitals, whatever. But to do the hard work that's required to identify and to design a means by which your values get perpetuated is incredibly difficult, partly because there's I don't know of a single example. I didn't have anybody to follow. I did this all, Bill Cadman, I did this all out of whole cloth. It's been extremely difficult.
Just to add some texture to it, give me one of the from the Shuck initiatives that you are putting down in perpetuity with your voice, your words, direct instructions.
These are one or two sentence statements?
Well, give me one, thou shall, for the future leaders of the Shuck initiatives.
Thou shall or shalt not?
Shall. Let's go with shall first.
To support organizations or individuals trying to move people from dependency to independence.
Give me a couple thou shalt nots, because I think that might even be more important.
Thou shalt not support anything that grows government. Thou shalt not support museums, galas, capital campaigns. Why? Because there are other foundations much, much larger than we are who fill that need. We have a niche, and building a building does not contribute to.
But you can have your name on that building. Don't you understand this, Steve? Isn't that real legacy?
Not for me. For others, and I don't criticize them at all. I applaud them. That's just not Joyce's and my agenda. I've done real estate development all over the place. You can't find my name on any of those projects. First name, kids' names, none of that. That just is not what drives me.
As you know, only the wealthiest people watch this program. So let's speak directly to them. Because you and Bill Cadman have spent literally years honing this down. To make sure that your intent is honored and Joyce's intent is honored after you're gone. And you've told me over and over and over again, it's the hardest work you have ever done. And that amazes me because I know what you've been through. What is your message to other people who they want to do good? All right, what do you want to do? I built all this. And you can give it to the community foundation. The community foundation will make sure that the United Way gets it, and this gets it, and that guy gets it. And whatever the political pressures du jour are in the future, that foundation will have to bend to those pressures. The Denver Foundation, Denver Community Foundation, is a perfect example of a living, breathing foundation that will always change with the political winds. So talk to the rich guys. What is it they don't realize?
It is, unfortunately, like so many major challenges, the solution's easy to identify, hard to execute. Be intentional. Go to the trouble of sitting down and identifying. And anybody who's accumulated the kind of wealth that allows them to establish a foundation has had enough experience planning, programming their operation, whatever it might be. So that part isn't new or alien to them. What is applying those practices, principles, skills to giving money away. Do the same thing when they're giving the money away as they did when they're trying to accumulate it. That's all. Be as intentional, be as disciplined in the giving as you were in the getting.
Because if you're not, what?
If you're not, you can be guaranteed, that were you to look down 25, 50 years from now, you'll be more than disappointed, you'll be angry.
Because that's your wealth is being used against your values.
Exactly. That's just the nature of things.
What do you say to someone who says, listen, I love my kids. And so obviously, you know, I trust my kids. And that's, you know, that's how these foundations start.
How about your grandkids? How about your great-grandkids? I've got great-grandkids. Joyce and I made a decision long ago. We were never going to put our kids on the board of the foundation. We give them a certain amount of inheritance, which they can spend or
just
donate.
Like parents' challenge, you give them money. So you don't have any of your own kids. None of your bloodline is on the board of your initiative.
Correct. Our board is made up of people like John Caldera, people who are dedicated and proven practitioners of the very principles that underlie the foundation, that underlie TSI.
Let me put this out and wrap it up, but not only have you helped kids with Parents Challenge, not only are you protecting your intent, the real leverage of what you've done is if other people follow your lead and restrict their foundations,
giving.
Their giving, their donations in a way that matches their intent, understanding that when you're gone, you have no say in this, none. And it's hard. I think it's hard for an entrepreneur to understand that because you're in there, you're fighting,
right.
And you think everybody's going to be thinking this way. No. You know, and if you don't spend the time to make this happen, you know, we are looking right now in America at the largest transfer of wealth in American history coming in the next 10, 15 years, 20 years of intergenerational transfers of wealth. And the people who made it have no control over where it's going.
They can if they'll put their noses to the grindstone the same way they did to accumulate. As I said earlier, it isn't difficult to figure out how to articulate all this stuff. It's difficult to accept the responsibility and the challenge of going through this in a very conscious, intentional way. Not with platitudes, not with generalities. I want to do good. I want to support people
in trouble who are trying to improve their lives.
Whatever. And it's so general that it says absolutely nothing. Be very specific, very precise, be very intentional. I'm not sure we've done it right. I just know we've done it as well as we could, given no other examples to follow. And I hope that others can learn from us. So what I said to the to those who tried to convince me to spend it down, and what I say in our videos to future board members, we want our foundation, we tell our foundation, one of the thou shalt is take risk. Be comfortable with risk. Be comfortable with failure that comes along with risk. Should be calculated, thoughtful, strategic.
Risk is not gambling, despite what those who hate capitalism think.
Exactly. And so we say, if you're going to take risk, you're going to make mistakes. Things aren't going to come out exactly the way you want. That if I suggest that that's the way they should think, then shouldn't I think the same way? So when we set up the foundation, I need to be an example, or try and set an example for others to emulate. So I say to those who wanted us to spend it down, we're going to take a chance, and we're going to entrust the future leadership of TSI to do what is right, because
if the founders' documents, Declaration and the Constitution, could narrowly focus government with a faith that it could, you're building the same sort of documents to keep it limited.
Absolutely. Right. They are our model.
Leave it at this. If somebody wants help in doing that, you'll talk to them?
Absolutely. I'd be glad to. I would be eager to, because I just want more people to follow this process. Again, not necessarily my priorities in terms of values. I would hope they would, but...
You did the hard work making the money. Now do some of the hard work to make sure it goes where you want.
Exactly.
Steve, people want to get information on Parents Challenge. Is there a website?
Absolutely. Parents Challenge, Shuck, just...
Shuck Initiatives, Parents Challenge.
Just use my name and then you'll find us.
Hey, Steve, thanks.
You bet, John. Thank you. You're great.
I appreciate it.
If you've enjoyed this episode of Devil's Advocate, I hope you'll share it with a friend. And I hope you'll subscribe and follow the show. We have new ones released weekly. Remember, this audio was taken from our TV show. To watch it, just search the letters IITV for Independence Institute TV on YouTube for this and many other great conversations.